follow up by phone or text enough because I feel like I've somehow earned the right to not work so hard for these girls anymore. If you ever wondered how teaching pickup can kind of screw you up, there's a nice example. So I don't call girls back as often as I should. I feel entitled for some reason. Like they should feel grateful and just show up at my doorstep when I want them to. Sure, sometimes I genuinely don't really dig a girl and don't care if I see her again, but other times I do, and I regret not putting in the extra effort a few weeks later. These are my stories. They're completely different now than they were 3 years ago, and they were completely different 3 years ago than they were 6 years ago. But they've all had the same purpose, to protect the status quo. My emotional inertia. So what stories do you tell yourself? Because until you're aware of your stories, you're not going to be able to change your behavior. Maybe you get very nervous in bars and clubs and tell yourself stories of inadequacy, that girls only like tall guys with muscles. Or maybe you tell yourself, I'll start approaching after a few drinks. Or maybe you tell yourself that you're always in too much of a hurry, too busy to stop and say hello to a girl on the street. Maybe you tell yourself that you need to have something really amazing to say to her for her to like you. So you stutter and stumble when talking to her, trying too hard and weirding her out. Here's a story to try out. Maybe you're already amazing. Or how about this one? Maybe you tell yourself that you're not even ready to go out yet. You sit at home and read more books like this one, telling yourself just a little bit more, or after I get a raise and a new haircut, or once I save up to buy some nice clothes. And then once you do get that raise, or get those clothes, then a new story pops up to take its place. You need to study more inner game first, or go on a diet. Then you'll be ready, yet 6 months have gone by. It's always something, isn't it? There always seems to be something that you don't have right this second, that if you had it, you'd be able to act in the exact way you'd like to, right? So what are your stories? What do you tell yourself to justify that internal resistance inside of you? And what stories can you tell yourself instead to remove as much of that resistance as possible? People talk a lot about the idea of skill and all this stuff. Pickup is a skill. It needs to be practiced, blah, blah, blah. I think as the years go on, it's being proven over and over that what you say isn't so important, how you approach isn't so important. What's important is that you move things forward without hesitation, without that resistance that you're obeying right now by doing nothing, by remaining in the status quo. The same resistance I listened to today at the gym. That girl could have been the love of my life, the absolute perfect girl for me. Who knows? I never will. The only important skill in pickup is learning how to stop buying into your own bullshit, to stop believing your own stories. The resistance is constant, so you must constantly fight against it, to acknowledge the stories you create for yourself, look them in the eye and say, you know what, I don't care if she's on her phone or her ass has pink on it, I want to meet her. And then you do it, without hesitation, without fear, and without apology. Sure, you'll have to flex your mental and emotional muscles and build up your body of self-awareness. But here's the good news. Those are the muscles chicks actually like. Unfortunately, we all buy into our own bullshit. We all believe our own stories from time to time. And chances are, the more anxiety and fear you have surrounding women and your sexuality, the more of your own stories and bullshit you've bought into. Subsection: Defense Mechanisms. There's a lot of unconscious fear bundled up in us and our sexualities. These fears usually manifest in a handful of very specific scenarios. Fear of approaching and starting a conversation with an attractive woman. Fear of stating sexual interest either directly or indirectly by asking for a phone number, calling a phone number, asking her out on a date, etc. Fear of initiating sexual contact, typically a first kiss situation. And the fear of actual sexual intercourse. I'm not going to hop into a debate about whether these fears are biological or socially conditioned, as that's not really important. My experience is that they're mostly conditioned, although we probably have some sort of genetic predispositions to certain anxieties more than others, just as some people are more genetically predisposed to conditions such as depression or shyness or whatever. The point is, the majority of men experience at least one of the above fears to some degree when it comes to interacting with women. There are a minority of men who will be completely devoid of one or more of the above fears, and a very tiny minority who will be devoid of all of the fears above. These anxieties are manifestations of an unwillingness to be vulnerable, and as such, they prevent you from killing your neediness. Typically, the needier you are, the more anxiety you'll have protecting that neediness, the more inertia you'll have. I don't know if these anxieties always existed or if they're a recent phenomenon, but I do know the statistics about anxieties in disorders in the past few decades are horrifying as our modern culture is becoming more and more anxiety-ridden by the year. The recent eruption in demand for dating advice is not a coincidence. Why we have these sexual anxieties isn't totally clear, and there seems to be as many reasons as there are people. This is unscientific, but in my experience coaching and working with hundreds of men over the past 5 years, I've noticed correlations between high degrees of sexual anxiety and the following: lack of a father figure growing up, emotionally abusive childhood, childhood traumas, strict religious upbringing, strict cultural upbringing. The sad fact about anxiety is that once you have it, it's there, and figuring out why it's there really does no good. You can either avoid it the rest of your life, or you can do something about it. We're here to do something about it. This section of the book is called Honest Action for a reason. I personally think anxiety is the biggest culprit when it comes to preventing men from being attractive and successfully picking up and seducing women. You remove anxiety, and trial and error will take care of most of the rest. Anxiety, almost by its very definition, represents a high level of investment in your identity in the opinion of others. Again, why this happens, I don't know. But let's say you get scared to death to say anything when a beautiful girl sits down next to you. The fact that you're scared to death demonstrates the high level of investment and neediness in her opinion of you. Why our egos and sense of self-worth have become so intimately tied to how receptive women are to our sexuality lately, again, I don't know. But it is. This neediness creates a fight-or-flight response in us. A surge of adrenaline, we begin sweating, our mind starts zipping at a million miles a minute, thinking of everything and nothing at once. And if we do manage to utter a word, chances are we stutter and sputter and make a red-faced fool out of ourselves, leading to further anxiety the next time a beautiful girl sits down next to us. This is a terrible conundrum, and almost all of us suffer from it. I suffered from it horribly, and it took me years to undo. Hopefully with what I learned, it won't take nearly as long or be nearly as painful for you as it was for me. The first step to overcoming your fears is to figure out what your pattern is. When we are confronted with our fears or anxieties, we have a pattern or strategy that we usually use to deal with them. For instance, my pattern is apathy. Whenever I'm confronted with something I'm afraid of, I pretend, or scratch that, I convince myself that I don't actually care. Over the years, working with hundreds of men, here are some of the most common patterns that I've noticed. 1. The blame game. The blame game is where, when confronted with something he's afraid of, a guy proceeds to blame someone or something else for his fear. For instance, let's say you're anxious about giving a presentation at work. Someone who does the blame game's natural response will come with all sorts of reasons why his boss is stupid, how he's way too smart to be doing this anyway, and how it's not his fault if things go wrong because he's been sick and so-and-so didn't do enough research. In the context of women, the blame game will often result in guys convincing themselves of stuff like, oh, well, she's stuck up, or she's just into guys who are good-looking, or she's too stupid for me anyway, or this club is too loud to talk to people, or women in Miami are just bitches, I need to find a new city. The excuses and blame are petty and ridiculous, and they can run deep. The awful part of the blame game is that it comes with anger and frustration. And if you do it enough, the anger will pile up, and you'll end up with some pretty angry and irrational beliefs about women. Guys who have played the blame game their whole lives may develop screwed up beliefs like, all women care about is money, how much money a guy has, or all girls in bars are stupid and shallow. This can lead to some pretty dark places. 2, apathy and avoidance. This has always been my Achilles heel, and it's quite common. Apathy and avoidance is exactly as it says. It's when a guy convinces himself that he doesn't care or that it's not important to him. I did this for years. I convinced myself that I didn't care about meeting women, and that it didn't really matter if girls I liked didn't find me attractive. Well, after enough years of sitting home alone looking at porn while all my friends were going through girlfriend after girlfriend, I had a rude awakening. I do care. Apathy and avoidance isn't the worst response when avoiding our fears with women, and that it usually can't last forever. We're biologically wired to pursue women, so at some point, instinct will win over. Where it is dangerous is in other areas of our life, such as career, family, or hobbies. The apathy and avoidance pattern is the root behind couch potatoes and disgruntled office workers of the world. 3, intellectualizing. A popular one when it comes to men and dating advice. In fact, I guarantee that this is part of the reason you're here. You have some sort of fear, anxiety, or pain related to women, and instead of actually doing something about it, you got online and decided to look up an answer that you could study. Intellectualizing is fairly harmless in that it provides side benefits. You learn a ton of information about a lot of subjects, and ultimately the intellectualizing will lead to more self-awareness and help clarify what sort of action you need to take. But there are many men who use intellectualizing as just another form of avoidance. It tends to be really smart guys, too, which is a problem, because the smarter you are, the more you're able to intellectualize and convince yourself that you need to learn and understand more. When it comes to women, this is not the answer. Honestly, if you went out and approached women for a year without ever reading a word of dating advice, you'd probably do okay. Sure, this stuff helps, but in the end, your best teacher is your experience. There comes a certain point where learning more about a subject is no longer beneficial, and on the contrary, it's just going to get you more mixed up and confused since you have no experience to actually apply your knowledge to. Intellectualizing also ends up having a backlash. Once you study a subject enough, it can actually increase your anxiety. By studying it so much, you've put more pressure on yourself to succeed and therefore build up higher expectations for yourself. There are more patterns, but these three above are the main ones that I've run into with men trying to overcome their anxieties. Also, there's a pattern within all the responses to fear that I listed above. All the responses that come up in the face of our fears do two things. They avoid the fear, and they usually do it by convincing ourselves of something that's not necessarily true. The blame game guy will convince himself that it's her fault. The apathy guy will convince himself that it doesn't matter. The intellectualizing guy will convince himself that he needs to learn and understand more first. Also, realize that no one is 100% one or the other. We all do all these all the time. In fact, we may stack them on top of each other. For example, I don't care what the girls think here because they're all stuck up bitches, so I'm going home. With that said, we all seem to have a favorite pattern that we fall back to the most often. The key to overcoming your fears first and foremost is to break your pattern response to your fear. This requires a certain level of self-awareness and discipline. So for instance, when I was learning to approach women, I had a lot of fear and anxiety, and my pattern was apathy. So I'd be hanging out in a bar, see a cute girl I liked, and my immediate reaction would be to say something like, "Eh, I don't really feel like talking right now," or "I don't feel like meeting girls right now." This was complete bullshit. I had purposely gone out that night for no other reason than to meet girls. I'd been reading books and websites all week about nothing but meeting girls. I obviously wanted to meet girls. It wasn't until I became aware of this pattern that I was able to start breaking it and forcing myself to talk to that girl that I wanted to talk to, even when my mind was telling me that I didn't want it. So here's some helpful ways to break your own pattern. 1. Take a moment and think about what you're most anxious about. Is it approaching? Is it showing sexual interest? Is it asking a girl out? Is it the first kiss? 2. Now write down your pattern with it. So for instance, calling women, pattern is apathy. Or approaching women, pattern is blame game. 3. Now create a goal for yourself. For instance, call every phone number I get, no matter how much I don't care. Write it down. 4. Tell a friend or buddy what you plan on doing and ask him to keep you accountable. That last item is important. Sharing your fears and having someone keep you accountable is integral to the whole process and makes it 10 times easier. Even the very act of sharing your fear with someone who can empathize and understand goes a long way to relieving your pressure. Subsection: You are not a victim. One assumption I've lived my life by for a long time now goes like this. If it's a matter of me being screwed up, or masses of people being screwed up in the same way, then it's far more likely that it's me who's being screwed up. Just to name an obvious example, guys often come to me and say something like, "I go out and I try to meet girls, but the problem is that all the girls in my town are catty and immature, so I guess I just need to move to a new city." Really? So it's not you who's screwed up, it's the 140,000 plus single women in your city who are all screwed up. That's a totally reasonable observation. Or you get guys who claim that every, not some, not most, but all American women are fickle and too individualistic, or that all women who dress provocatively are immoral and cheaters and would never make a good girlfriend. Guys make negative assumptions and stereotypes about millions of women for no other reason than to shirk accepting responsibility for their own shortcomings. This appears to me to be nothing but a victim mentality, and it pervades a lot of guys' thinking, some in more obvious ways than others. This doesn't necessarily mean that general observations are wrong. It just means that you're interpreting them in such a way to victimize yourself. Sure, American women may be more fickle and pretentious than their European counterparts, but then again, they may not be. Women in your town might actually be more closed off than women in a bigger city. or they might not. But you're choosing to let these observations be responsible for your results, because it's easier to feel like the victim, to feel that like that fucked up and cruel world is shortchanging you, rather than to admit that you just suck at something and nobody else seems to care. Human stereotype for a reason, so that we can manage large chunks of information in order to orient ourselves more efficiently. Often stereotypes can be useful, but often they're not. Often they're nothing more than excuses, ways for us to avoid the blame and responsibility for not being satisfied with our results. And these excuses hurt us and shut us off from opportunities. So returning to the women in my town are cold example, yeah, they may, on average, be colder than, say, Las Vegas women. But are all of them? No. Maybe 40%? 50%? But if you write them all off as being cold and use it as an excuse and not take responsibility, you're effectively shutting yourself off from 50% of the women in your town. You're effectively missing out on hundreds of opportunities. The same goes for complaints against American women. There's something like 40 million single women in the U.S., and you truly believe that you can't find one good one? Whose fault is that? It's your fault. You're being lazy. You're being lazy and unfairly judging millions of women all because you aren't willing to take responsibility for your failures. I believe strongly in taking responsibility for everything that occurs in your life. Our minds are always looking for ways to avoid pain and failure and rejection. And so they're constantly churning out rationalizations to keep us impeccable. It's them who fucked up, not us. Blame is yet another form of investment in neediness. As long as it's their fault, then you don't have to make yourself vulnerable. But when one practices taking responsibility for everything that happens in their life, you stop blaming others. It becomes less a question of blame and more a question of sacrifice. It's no longer their fault that you're still single because they're all cold bitches, but now it's your fault and a question of whether you're willing to sacrifice the extra effort or not find a woman who isn't a cold bitch. Taking responsibility and morphing blame into sacrifice empowers you. It puts the ball in your court and returns you to the healthy reality that the only person in this world who determines your success and failure is you. The question of blame, responsibility, and sacrifice is a profound one in relationships as well. Dysfunctional relationships almost always crumble under the pressure of one person blaming the other for their shortcomings or transgressions. Research has shown a direct correlation between the amount of blame leveled between partners and their propensity to break up. The recipe for a healthy and happy relationship is one where both partners take responsibility for their own emotions and their choice to commit to the other. Just to give you an example, before I got into all this dating advice stuff, I dated a girl for 4 years in high school and college. I was madly in love with her, and she ended up cheating on me and leaving me for another guy. For a long time, I blamed her for being a cheating, lying whore, and I was very angry, and rightly so. But as time has gone on, I've recognized a few things. For one, I wasn't exactly the boyfriend of the year, and in many ways, her cheating and leaving me wasn't very surprising. Secondly, there were plenty of warning signs that I chose to ignore or was just completely oblivious to. And third, regardless of her actions, I made a conscious choice to commit to her day in and day out, and the risk of being cheated on was always a possibility of that commitment. In the end, I made the conscious decision that I was willing to sacrifice the risk of being hurt in order to enjoy the commitment of our relationship, and I wouldn't take that decision back. It was my responsibility. That's an extreme example, but again, the application is ubiquitous. I used to have a pretty stern love-hate relationship for superficial club girls. My style of game was, and still is, very much intellectual and humor-based. I prefer to get girls into interesting conversations where I can show off my mental gymnastics. For a long time, the ability to hook and attract drunk party girls in high-end clubs eluded me. It frustrated me for a long time, and the hate part of the love-hate was that I saw them as fickle, stupid, and shallow. Now, that may be true, but I was blaming them for my lack of success with them. I mean, how dare they not be attracted to me? If they weren't so dumb, they'd be lining up to bang me, and that's how the world should be, right? The truth was, I had to make a choice. Was I willing to make the sacrifice in order to learn how to pick up girls like that? At the end of the day, that's the only relevant question. The girls you meet will be the girls you meet, but are you willing to put in the effort and sacrifice to make something of it? When I did, I found something out, that I don't particularly enjoy girls like that, even if they are hot. Eventually, I was no longer willing to make that sacrifice. Is it their fault for being who they are? No. Is it their fault I wasn't able to get with them for so long? No. Is it their fault that I often choose not to bother with them anymore? No. But I also discovered that not all of them are like that. In fact, many of them are smart, interesting, and fun, and beautiful. But until I opened myself up to that possibility and took it upon myself to find them, I was missing out. Challenge yourself to find the good and beautiful thing inside of everyone. It's there. It's your job to find it, not their job to show you. Subsection: Stereotypes and Responsibility. As I mentioned before, humans stereotype for a reason. There's an infinite amount of information going on in the world at any given time. Even the simplest of people are highly complex and multifaceted individuals with varying motivations, emotions, reactions, and beliefs. To account for the sheer amount of variables present in any large social situation is absolutely impossible for the human mind. Therefore, we evolve the propensity to stereotype as a simple solution. We observe a few basic actions of a certain type of individual, and then we extrapolate that onto an entire population. The two Romanian women I dated valued manners and courtesy, so all Romanian women must value manners and courtesy. Or Germans tend to be taller than average, therefore German women must prefer taller men. Or black guys often hit on fat girls, so black guys must like big girls. Or smart girls never go to nightclubs. Tall women are always insecure about height. Girls in short skirts just want attention. Women under 22 are immature and fickle. Girls in clubs are bitches. Lawyers are easy. Latin women just want you for your money. On and on and on and on and on. This isn't to say that stereotypes are always wrong. They're not. Often there's a little bit of truth to them. Otherwise, they wouldn't exist. But often there's little to no truth in them either. And often, they end up doing more harm than good. Particularly in the case of picking up and becoming more competent with women. I encourage guys to steer away from stereotypes as much as possible. Even if you're absolutely convinced that they're true, they're just almost never worth buying into. Any stereotype you come up with is going to have far too many exceptions to make it worth your time holding on to it. And it's not worth the drawback, relinquishing your personal responsibility to each interaction. See, the second you decide something like, German women like tall guys, or white girls don't like Asians, or club girls are all bitches, or law students are easy, you're relinquishing your responsibility for the interaction. It's another defense mechanism. It's another way for you to say afterwards, whether you got her or not, see, I knew it, they're all bitches, or whatever the stereotype is. To be more specific, let's say you decide that all club girls are bitches. There may be legitimate problems you have and legitimate factors you could be improving. You may need to dress better, speak louder, stand up straighter, and be more confident and less invested on the approach. But the second you say, see, club girls are bitches, you remove all responsibility for improvement from yourself. It's a cop-out and a way of protecting the status quo and your current level of investment. It's a way of shirking personal responsibility, and when you shirk personal responsibility, you never improve, you never become more vulnerable, and you never become less needy. The single best advice I can give you if you wish to improve at anything is to take full responsibility and accountability of your results and your actions. Everything that happens in your life, whether good or bad, you should try to take some sort of accountability for it. We're only capable of changing and improving what we have control over, and if we refuse to take control over our lives, then we can never expect to improve our lives. Obviously, from an objective point of view, there are always going to be situations which were completely out of your control. I could sit here and rattle off 1,000 examples of times where something completely extraneous derailed my interaction with a woman, and there was little to nothing I could do about it. On top of that, we've all been subjected to a lifetime of social influences and injustices. Many of us were raised in difficult family or educational situations. Other of us have been wronged by women in the past. Are we responsible for all of this as well? This is a common and insightful question I get from men. If so many things are out of my control have happened to me in my relationships, how can I hold myself responsible for things that I had absolutely no control over? Here's the point. You can't always control what happens to you, but you can always control how you respond to what happens to you. You may have no control over the fact that the last woman you dated had abandonment issues and freaked out when you wanted to take a trip with her and dumped you, but you can control how you process it and how you react to it. You can either react to it as a victim or take control, learn from it, and move on. You may have no control over the blonde in a short skirt who seemed stuck up and rejected you outright for no good reason, but you control how you react to it. You can either react as a victim and say that all girls like that are bitches, or you can learn from it and move on. You may have had no control over the fact that your parents divorced when you were young and your father was emotionally distant. You can react as a victim and assume that people are all nasty and selfish, or you can learn from it, take control, and move on. I'm not a religious person, but the theologian and philosopher Reinhold Niebuhr wrote a simple prayer that I believe holds a lot of wisdom. He said, "God, grant me the serenity to accept things that I cannot change, and the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference." That, in a nutshell, is what personal responsibility and accountability comes to: accepting what you cannot change, and acting to change what you can. If a woman rejects you, you can't control her reaction to you. But ask yourself, could you have approached her with more confidence? Said something more interesting? Could you dress better? Could you look better? Could you be more sober? There are always plenty of things within your control in any given situation. Focus on those and let the chips fall where they may. Men develop a lot of bizarre rationalizations and beliefs around women in order to protect themselves. I can honestly spend an entire 300-page book on this topic alone, but I've limited it to the highlights in this chapter to hopefully make it clear where yours may and probably lie. As you go out and take action and actively pursue women, you're going to be confronted with these rationalizations and beliefs. Some of them will be new, others will have existed for a lifetime. Regardless, it will take a lot of awareness and diligence to call yourself on your own bullshit and unravel these unhealthy attitudes. Always remember that these beliefs and rationalizations were invented by your mind to keep the status quo, to protect your highly invested ego. Subsection: Sexual Motivation. Another problem a lot of men run into, aside from their fears and their anxieties, is a seeming lack of motivation to get out there and pursue women. It's one thing to sit at home and read books like this one. It's something completely different to actually get off your ass on a Saturday, go force yourself to approach a woman. It takes a lot of effort at first, and some men are easily able to convince themselves that it may not be worth that effort. Since the advent of internet pornography, it's become easier than ever for men to satisfy their sexual urges. And in 2011, there's an entire generation that has grown up always having access to pornography, as much as they want, since they hit puberty. There are a lot of anti-pornography movements, and there are even theories about pornography addiction that are thrown around. Although there's no scientific evidence yet for porn addiction, here's something that I can tell you that is absolutely true. Porn kills your motivation to pursue real women. There's a bit of an epidemic of apathy going on worldwide, where husbands, boyfriends, and even single men are turning to pornography rather than real-life women that they see walking around every day. And it makes sense why. It's easier. The women are hotter. The sex is more exciting. It's available at any time with the click of a mouse. It's usually free. The girls never say no. It's emotionless, and there are no obligations or commitments involved. The problem is that there are some negative side effects, the first being that porn creates very, very unrealistic expectations about sex, about women, and about sexuality. Porn makes money by accentuating and exaggerating sexual ideals. Actual sex with an actual woman often involves awkward moments of figuring out what she likes, what you like, who likes it which way. It also often involves ecstatic moments of emotional intimacy, something porn can never provide. Also, real women, no matter how hot they are, have imperfections. Imperfections that are covered up in porn by makeup and plastic surgery. If a guy gets too accustomed to the perfectionism of porn, he's going to have a lot more trouble becoming motivated by the girls he sees every day. The other problem is that porn is so easy that it encourages men to masturbate a lot. And as we all know, as men, the more we masturbate, the more interested we become in food and television, and the less we become in women and accomplishing something. Napoleon Hill wrote a famous section in his classic work, Think and Grow Rich, called Sexual Transfiguration. Hill noticed and theorized that extremely successful men had extremely high sex drives. But not only did they have very high sex drives, but they channeled their sexual energy into their work and their accomplishments. Often they would abstain from sex or masturbation for long periods of time and would therefore feel more energized. Science is starting to back this up. Orgasms, or more accurately, ejaculation in men, actually causes a depletion of various hormones and endorphins, which often leads to useful behaviors as well as motivation. Men who have masturbated constantly since adolescence often masturbate so hard and furiously that they desensitize their penis to realistic scenarios. When you masturbate 3 times a day for years straight, You often have to grip yourself very hard and rub furiously to get off. This can often lead to sexual issues and impotence when a man actually does get into bed with a woman. This is because vaginas are soft, they're wet, and the sensations they give are subtle. Your iron-fisted grip does a horrible job of preparing you for the warm lady love. So here's what I recommend to you and to all men who are looking to get motivated and improve themselves. It's my patented masturbation and porn diet that I give the men. In fact, I still go on this diet from time to time when I want to add a little motivation to my life. It works wonders, and a lot of men have gotten stunning results from it. I've talked to guys who literally sat around reading dating advice for years without ever taking action, but on my masturbation and porn diet, within 2 weeks they were out meeting women and trying to get dates. So without further ado, start out by ending all pornography immediately. Start that today. Delete everything from your computer, throw out any disc or DVDs that you have, and if you have trouble controlling your urges, download some free website blocking software and block every porn site you know of indefinitely. This may sound horrible or extreme, but trust me, you'll thank me in a month. Then, limit your masturbation to once a week. Schedule it. Pick a day. I usually pick Monday. Do not deviate from your masturbation schedule. If you want even a larger dose of motivation, and you want to be as horny as a 14-year-old, limit your masturbation to once every other week. Again, pick a day and hold yourself to it. When you masturbate, you're only allowed to fantasize about women you've met and have not had sex with. It could be that woman at work, that girl you met on Saturday night, the girl you have a date with that week, whatever, but she has to be real and she has to be someone you have not slept with, but obviously want to. When you masturbate, use lotion or lube. Do it slower than usual. Drag it out longer than 10 minutes if you can. Take your time with it. Enjoy it. You don't get to do this every morning, remember? Finally, when you're out and about during your daily life, every beautiful woman you see, every hot girl you talk to, I want you to imagine what it'd be like to have sex with her. Visualize it in your head. Try to imagine her in her underwear. Imagine her giving you a blowjob. Imagine railing her right there on the street with everybody watching. Notice how turned on you get. Chances are your desire to go talk to her is suddenly going to shoot through the roof. Follow this for a few weeks and you should find yourself pretty damn motivated. If you mess up or give in, just start over again. Don't be hard on yourself. Ideally, within a couple weeks, the idea of going out to approach women should sound exciting to you instead of a chore. This is good, so go out and do it. Chapter 11, How to Take Action. Quote, courage is not the absence of fear, rather the judgment that something else is more important than fear. Ambrose Redmond, writer. Think back to the last time someone you didn't want to see tried to hang out with you. Maybe it was that annoying guy at work. Maybe it was your black sheep brother-in-law. Maybe it was a blind date your mother tried to set you up with her friend's fat daughter. Think of that awkward situation where you had to turn someone down. Think back to the last time you had to politely come up with excuses to not spend time with somebody. How did it make you feel? Not good. Rejecting people, whether you're doing it blatantly, go away and leave me alone, or indirectly, oh, I'm actually really busy this weekend, maybe another time, is actually an awkward and uncomfortable situation that nobody enjoys. Very, very few people in this world enjoy being an asshole or hurting someone else's feelings. Now imagine having to do this on almost a daily basis. There's nothing gratifying about it. In fact, it becomes frustrating and tedious. It also explains why women seem to complain about guys hitting on them or about guys being creepy. They have to reject them, and rejecting someone is generally an unpleasant and uncomfortable experience. Guys who have the perception of women as these egocentric creatures who laugh at us from their sexual mountaintops, doling out which man gets a chance at the divine pussy access and which man gets to squander away his time in solitude, it doesn't actually work like that. Think about it. Why do women spend so much time and effort on their appearance? Why do they go to singles bars and join dating sites and give blind dates a try? They don't do it so that they can revel in rejecting a bunch of guys. They're just as lonely and frustrated as we are. They want to meet a guy, but not just a guy, a great guy, a guy who's confident, charming, fun, and interesting, a guy who isn't needy, who is vulnerable, and who will honestly express himself to her. She wants you to be that guy. She's secretly rooting for you. She doesn't want to reject you. Every time a new guy walks up to her, she's secretly saying to herself, please, please, please be the guy. Be the attractive guy that I can't say no to. And then he nervously stutters around buying her a drink and makes uncomfortable jokes about the weather, and she's back to that horribly uncomfortable position of having to reject him again. Other times, it doesn't even get that far. It's obvious before he even opens his mouth that it's game over. He dresses like a clown or hasn't combed his hair in 3 months, or he's too drunk to even look at her in the eye. This is also why women are willing to overlook a lot of bonehead moves and mistakes we make if they like us. It's amazing how many second and third chances a girl will give you if she likes you. She's rooting for you. She's your biggest fan. She's saying, oh, he chickened out of asking me out this time, but I'll find an excuse to call him so maybe he'll do it next time. They're begging for you to succeed. They want it just as bad as you do. All those women in the bars, they want to be that for you to be that unbelievably attractive man. That man who makes time stop for them and can make them feel things they've never felt before. They want you to do that. And when they reject you, it's not because they enjoy it, or because they have a big ego, or because you're too short, or your muscles aren't big enough. It's because you didn't give her that feeling. You didn't make her spin and fall and laugh and forget where she was or who she was with. That's what she goes out every night looking for, the man who can make her feel more alive. The next time you approach, and when she sees you coming, and trust me, she usually sees you coming, know that she's already rooting for you. Secretly, she wants you to succeed as much as you do. And for a moment, she's your biggest fan. And your role as a man is to take action. It's all on you. It's always on you. You move things forward. And this is where the vast majority of guys falter. An action as simple as opening your mouth, moving your feet in the right direction, or picking up the phone. They simply don't do it. The fear and rationalizations mentioned in the previous chapter are too large. It seems too overwhelming, and so nothing gets done. And ultimately, no matter how much you read, how much you study, and how much you watch about dating and picking up women, if you're unable to take action, you'll get nowhere. Chances are, if you're reading this, this is not the first book on dating or pickup that you've ever read. Some men become self-help and dating advice junkies, reading and reading and reading and never taking action. In fact, sometimes guys use reading and hoarding information and advice is a way to avoid taking action. They feel like if they're reading a 150-page book on attraction, then they're accomplishing something, right? And as long as they're accomplishing something, then they don't have to confront what they're afraid of. Going out, standing in front of a woman, and expressing their truth, being vulnerable, and subjecting themselves to rejection. This isn't a new problem. The self-help and business advice industries have been dealing with it for decades. The men's dating advice has been dealing with it as well. But up to this point, it's done a piss-poor job of motivating men and helping to teach them how to take action. The classic advice when it comes to guys taking action is more or less to jump into the deep end until you learn to swim. The idea was that if you had a crippling fear of approaching women, and you sign up for a boot camp or a program where a coach, like myself, takes you out to a bar and more or less yells at you until you approach 25 women in one night. What you say and what happens is all over the place, but at least you're getting off your ass and approaching. The problem with the overload method of taking action is that it's short-term and it doesn't create a lasting habit. What also happened with these situations is that the guy who paid to go out and approach 25 women feels great the next day, but then a week or two later when he goes out again by himself, the coach isn't there yelling at him. He doesn't have hundreds or thousands of dollars invested in his performance, and he goes back to his old habits and doesn't take action anymore. This is highly problematic, and it's one of the reasons I believe the pickup artist industry is crippling itself and not going to last much longer. If anyone took the time to look into some of the very fundamental psychological research on anxieties and fear, they'd find a pretty plain and simple solution to help guys out to get started taking action on their own, without fear, and with daily success. Subsection: The Guide to Overcoming Your Anxiety. The biggest misconception about overcoming your anxieties when acting with women is that the fear is something that can or should be eliminated. Even many of the forward-thinking dating coaches in the industry who have finally come to recognize fear and hesitance as the major culprit in most men's lack of success have failed to recognize this. Fear is never eliminated. It is eased and adapted. Saying you want to get rid of all your fear is like saying you want to get rid of all anger or all sadness. This sounds like a noble goal, but research shows that what we end up doing instead is we suppress or avoid the emotions, leaving us less capable of dealing with them the next time they arise. Instead, what's recommended is that we learn to adapt our negative emotions into positive behavior. For instance, people with anger issues are encouraged to channel their anger through productive means, exercising, working, writing letters, displaying their feelings, etc. To avoid or ignore the anger will only bring it back next time. When my first girlfriend broke up with me when I was 19, I made a conscious decision. I had laid in bed depressed for a week or two, and I quickly realized how ridiculous and pointless it was. I was hurt and I was angry, but laying around in bed and avoiding her was stressing me out. So I decided to take another strategy. I decided that I would work on myself and literally told myself I was doing it so that she would be sorry she ever broke up with me. I did it out of spite. My inspiration for self-improvement began with revenge. For the first time in my life, I joined a gym. I began studying more. I went out with a female friend and bought some new clothes. I went to parties with new people I had met. The whole time, my motivation was the anger and hurt that I had towards my ex-girlfriend. The same concept can be applied to your fear and anxiety around women. As mentioned in the previous chapter, most of us have become experts at avoiding these fears and anxieties. In fact, that very fact that you're reading this book right now partially means that you're probably avoiding taking action in some form with women. It's logical. If you had no problem taking action with women, you'd not need a book to sit here and tell you how to do it. In fact, the question would never even come up in the first place. You just get up and go do it. The other problem with approaching the anxiety around women as something that must be removed is that this often only serves to amplify it. Maybe you've already gone out and intended to approach a beautiful woman that you saw somewhere, but you got very nervous. You probably stood there and hesitated. Maybe you decided something like, okay, I'll get a drink first, then I'll approach her. Or, I'll go to the bathroom and then come back and speak to her. But after the drink in the bathroom, she's still there and you're just more nervous than you were before. So now you start trying to come up with some witty or interesting line to say to her. But this isn't helping. It's hard to come up with something on the spot, and everything suddenly sounds kind of stupid in your head. Now you're getting really nervous. Maybe you've been reading and taking dating advice for a while and have read about breathing techniques, emotional state, or having a routine stack. Maybe you've tried a couple of these techniques. Now suddenly you're the guy standing in the middle of the bar doing weird breathing exercises or pumping your fists in the air trying to convince yourself how fearless you are. Of course, what you're subcommunicating to everyone is that, in fact, how insanely highly invested you are in their attention. And if you're like most guys, even this doesn't work. And the fact that it doesn't just makes you even more insecure. Maybe you didn't do the technique right. Maybe you're just an exception, and no matter what you do, you're going to be hosed with women for the rest of your life. Suddenly, you start thinking back to all the hundreds of reports on forums you've read where other guys just like you somehow were able to approach a girl like this, but for some reason you can't, and now you feel even worse. At this point, your night has completely gone to shit. You're totally debilitated from doing anything. And for all of your intellectualizing and techniques to quote-unquote remove your fear, you're actually far more fearful than you were in the first place. In the old pickup artist days, there was something called the 3-second rule, which dictated that once you saw a woman you liked, you had 3 seconds to approach her, no matter what. The rule was designed to avoid this scenario. In Buddhism, there's a saying that what you resist will persist, and it's true in this case as well. The proper way to approach your fear and anxiety is to accept it, recognize that it's normal and part of who you are, and to not even try to hide it from the girl. Think back to something you're very, very good at. Maybe you're really great at some part of your job at work. Or maybe you used to be awesome at tennis or chess back in school. Maybe you're a great public speaker. All those activities, when you were called on to put yourself on the line, whether it was a major tennis match, a big presentation, or a major meeting to lead, you probably got nervous beforehand. But did that nervousness make you crumble, or did it invigorate you? I used to love giving presentations in school. I was great at them, too. And I used to get nervous before every single one. In fact, I've probably given over 50 or 60 public talks for my dating coach job over the last 4 years. I was nervous before every single one of those, too. But the nervousness almost felt good. I was confident in my ability. It was a borderline excitement. I knew I was going to blow everybody away, and I knew that they would love me. So even though I was nervous to get up there, I couldn't wait. It's like professional athletes who say that they can't sleep the night before a big game. They're nervous, but they can't wait to get out there. They're confident in their ability and thrive on the pressure and the anxiety. Psychological research actually shows that people perform better at activities under a certain amount of anxiety. In fact, what matters isn't the anxiety itself, but the person's confidence in their own ability to perform whatever action they're anxious about. So it's less about anxiety and more about how confident you feel you are. The less confident you feel, the more anxiety will hinder you. The more confident you are in your ability, the more anxiety will help you. This is actually where a lot of dating advice and pickup theory actually hurts you. They explain these complicated models and theories, giving you tons of material to memorize and practice, and present picking up women as some complicated task akin to rocket science that only works once you've tried and failed 1,000 times. That's going to scare the shit out of any guy who is with little to no experience. The opposite is true. Pickup is not complicated. And if you can't have a conversation with anyone, then you're capable of picking up a woman. There's nothing to learn, only things to do. And the fear doesn't go away. You learn to hone it to help you. I still get nervous every time I approach a girl. I've approached probably over 2,000 at this point. I still get nervous every time I go to kiss one, and I've probably kissed at least 300 at this point. I still get nervous every time I bring a girl home, and I've slept with almost 100 women. The fear never goes away. What changes is my neediness and my vulnerability. The difference between now and 2005 is that back in 2005, I was incredibly needy and highly invested in how women perceive me, and incredibly unconfident in my own ability to interact with women. These combined to amplify my anxiety in ways that were unbearable. Now, if I say or do something that screws everything up, and I still do all the time, I don't really care. It doesn't change how I feel about myself, and it doesn't change my confidence in my ability to interact with women in the future. What's important is not the level of anxiety or fear, but your confidence at whatever you're afraid to do. So now you're probably saying, well, that's nice. You're confident and non-needy because you've been with so many women. But what about a guy who's little to no experience with women? Well, I'm glad you asked, because there is a way to slowly build up your confidence and competence to slowly desensitize yourself to your anxiety. In the past, when it came to dealing with fear and rejection, all dating coaches basically took the approach of throw him into the deep end and hope he learns to swim. If you're afraid to approach, they would give you crazy lines or push you into very intimidating and difficult social situations, hoping to scare you straight. The idea was, if they could put you in the worst possible situations, then simple, regular social situations would stop being intimidating. I guess it's like taking someone who wants to get in shape and putting them in a marathon right away. It'll help, but wow, it's not going to be pretty or pleasant. So that marathon, despite how ridiculously painful and difficult it is, will only give someone some good exercise once, not as a habit. If that's it and they never exercise again, then they're going to revert back to their old, out-of-shape selves. The same is true with our fears. The way to attack anxieties is through incremental but high-volume exposure, not single extreme exposure. For instance, previously dating advice would say something like, if you're afraid to approach women, put on a crazy outfit, go tell the girl that you're a tooth fairy, purposely make a complete fool of yourself, and then you won't be nervous around women anymore. Seriously, it's amazing people used to pay for advice like this. And sure, this would work. Guys wouldn't be nervous afterward anymore. But they'd wake up a week later and be back at square one. To develop lasting change, you come at it from the opposite angle. If you're afraid to approach women, then you find the easiest and lowest intensity way to approach, and then do it in high volume. So for instance, instead of doing the embarrass yourself exercise above one time, you would approach 10 women in an hour or two, just asking for the time. Nothing more is required, just ask what time it is. Finding something easy, but repeat it many, many times. Then the next day, you go out and ask 10 women what time it is, followed by, how's your day going? And each day, you slowly make it harder and more intensive. Eventually, you'll be able to approach any woman in any circumstance and express your interest in her, without fear, without worrying about what to say or what line to use. I've taken guys who have never approached a woman in their life and gotten them walking up to beautiful women on the street and asking for coffee dates within a matter of days. And you can apply this to all sorts of situations, getting physical with women, emailing women online, calling phone numbers, sexual humor, conversations with women, etc., etc. It's just a matter of knowing how to structure your exposure. To use a metaphor, for any of you who go to the gym, you probably know that there are two ways to exercise and get strong: high intensity and low repetition, or low intensity and high repetition. The high intensity, low repetition increases the power of your muscles. Think stacking on tons of weight and only lifting it 3 times. Whereas low intensity, high repetition increases your conditioning. Think taking a low amount of weight and doing it 20 times. Well, we're trying to condition ourselves, but just socially. And just like in weightlifting, low intensity, high repetition is the way to go. Any man can condition himself this way, and it's not hard to imagine the benefits of this method. The easiest example is approaching women. Start with something simple and innocuous. Hell, you could even start by asking clerks and cashiers how their day's going. They're paid to be nice to you, after all. But start simple. What time is it? Or maybe, can you tell me how to get to the bus stop? Do that 10 or 20 times. Then go out the next day and approach women the same way, but ask them how their day's going. Then go out and ask 10 or 20 women for directions, how their day's going, and then ask them a personal question about themselves. Slowly work up until you're able to approach women by telling them that you think they're attractive and asking them out on a date. You'll be surprised how quickly you can get comfortable doing this. In fact, if you're like most guys and stick with it, then you'll begin to get hooked to the adrenaline rush and actually enjoy the butterflies you get when you approach new women. But this method doesn't just work with approaching. It can work with any aspect of the interaction in which you need to take action. Afraid to kiss girls on a date? Challenge yourself first to hold their hand. Once you've done that a few times, then challenge yourself to put your arm around them and leave it there. Once you've done that a few times, then challenge yourself to kiss them on the cheek. And finally, challenge yourself to go for the kiss itself. All these goals can be done with the same girl, and even on the same date. But the more important part is to stair-step your approach, rather than expecting yourself to immediately be banging girls by the dozen after a week. Get creative. Other sticking points this method can be applied to. Stalling out in conversation. Being comfortable talking about yourself. Calling girls and asking them on dates. Going for sex once you've been out on a date with a girl. Flirting and teasing women. Showing direct interest, stating that you're attracted to them. Really, all it takes is a focused and concerted effort on your part without actually expecting yourself to go from 0 to 100 in one night. Instead, you'll slowly but surely gain little successes repeatedly, not only building your confidence and confidence, but making the whole process a lot more enjoyable, therefore helping you get over your anxiety. And the great thing about this method is that as you get accustomed to your anxiety and become more confident in your ability, you'll be even more motivated to meet and date even more women, increasing your confidence and confidence further, and easing your anxiety that much more. There's momentum to it, which is absolutely integral to developing a healthy and successful love life. The last thing I'll say about this method before moving on is that you should focus only on one thing at a time. And when I say focus on one thing at a time, I really mean only quantify one aspect of your interactions at a time. So if you want to be less nervous approaching women, don't bother yourself about how to get phone numbers or when to go for the kiss or what text you should be writing. Just focus on approaching. But by the same token, when you're focusing on getting physical and aggressive with women, don't worry about approaching. A very common form of avoidance with men who are terrified of the later stage parts of picking up women, such as escalating sex, dates, etc., is that they'll actually use approaching more women as a form of avoidance. They'll have a beautiful woman totally enwrapped with them, and instead of seeing how far they can push things, they'll take her number and move on, because they tell themselves that they want to keep working on approaches. When approaching is not their problem, getting sexual with women is their problem. Again, some self-awareness is critical. Take things one at a time. Stair-step them slowly until you get not only comfortable with it, but excited about it. Then move on to the next thing. That excitement and enthusiasm will bleed over into the next form of anxiety and motivate you to keep going. For example, a guy who's scared to approach women should stair-step approaches until he enjoys approaching. Then use that enjoyment to stair-step his way up, displaying more interest and communicating more openly. Then use his enjoyment and the adrenaline from that to stair-step his way up to being physical with women. Soon he'll be getting laid and dating some very cool women. If this sounds like a lot of work, it's actually not. It's actually quite simple, and if you're focused about it and don't get distracted with all sorts of mundane and extraneous theory, it's very straightforward and can be accomplished quickly. I've taken guys who have never approached a woman in their life and gotten them walking up to beautiful women on the street and asking for coffee dates in a matter of days. I've now helped 3 guys lose their virginities within weeks of using this method. One of them was 29 years old. One of them was 25 years old. Another client of mine slept with two new girls in the same weekend after applying these principles. If you'd like more information on how to apply these concepts to your own life with quick results, check out the further reading section at the end of this book. Subsection: Courage and Boldness. Feeling fear and acting despite of it builds courage. Anytime you're afraid to do something and feel some invisible force holding you back, yet you push through it anyway, you're building courage within yourself. Courage is a form of discipline. It's taking a certain action even though you feel like doing something else. The difference here is that courage involves acting against fear, whereas discipline involves acting against laziness or fatigue. Courage is built like a muscle. The stair-stepped exercises in the previous section are designed to progressively build your courage. The more courage you build, the more you'll be capable of bold actions. Bold actions require a lot of vulnerability and destroy neediness. Stopping a woman and asking her for the time requires little courage and is not a very bold action. It's well within social norms. Walking up to a group of six people sitting down, asking to speak to the most attractive woman for a moment, telling her that you find her to be beautiful and that you'd like to take her out sometime, is quite bold. It's bold because it requires a lot of courage to disrupt social norms, and it requires quite a bit of vulnerability. But there's a caveat here. You must know that you're interrupting social norms. You must acknowledge that what you're doing is unusual. Else, if you don't, you'll simply be seen as someone who's out of touch and oblivious, which is not attractive. This is a common mistake that many of the social disconnect types of men make. Since they're so out of tune with social norms, they often have no problem behaving in a bold way. The problem is they aren't aware of when they're being bold or not. For instance, I once worked with a guy who was very socially disconnected. We were in a shopping mall and we were walking around talking to women together. As we were going down an escalator, we saw a very attractive girl going up the escalator on the other side. As we passed her, I mentioned to him that he should talk to her. He immediately began running up the down escalator and began talking to her. Obviously, this is very awkward and a strange thing to do. And had he been aware of how awkward and strange it was, he would have been bold. But instead, he was just unaware, and as such, he immediately creeped the girl out. This is why if you're ever going to do something that is unusual, such as approach a woman in a strange location, try to kiss her in a strange location, invite her out after just meeting her, etc., it's important that you communicate that you realize that what you're doing is abnormal. Such as, you know, I've never done this before, and I know we just met, but why don't you come to the restaurant with me? Or, excuse me, this is kind of random, but I thought you were cute and I wanted to meet you. The more bold your action, the greater attraction you're going to create. The more bold the action, the more vulnerability you show, and the more you polarize responses. If you walk around and ask women for the time, you're not polarizing very much. Most of them will give you the time. The worst rejection you'll ever get is, oh, sorry, I don't have a watch, or something similar. But if you walk around and ask women on dates, you're going to get polarized reactions. You'll get nervous and excited yeses, intense and reserved noes. If you go even further and try to kiss a woman at an unexpected time, you're either going to get a very enthusiastic yes or an enthusiastic no. The point is, greater boldness leads to greater polarization. This is yet another argument for behaving in an aggressive manner. This is also why one of my mantras that I tell guys is, always err on the side of aggression. Whenever you're in doubt of what you should do, err on the side of aggression. Choose the more bold action. Because if you wait around for the safer and less bold opportunity to make a move on her, chances are the attraction will be less or may even dwindle. The techniques laid out in this chapter are, at the root of them, techniques designed to build your boldness. As you go through life, you're going to be presented in an infinite variety of situations involving women. One of the reasons that I shy away from giving specific techniques or tactics is because if I give you a very specific way to kiss a girl, that may end up only being relevant in 20% of the situations you ever want to kiss a girl in. But if I teach you how to build your courage, increase your boldness, overcome your debilitating fear of getting physical with women, you will be equipped to kiss a girl anywhere and everywhere. In the long run, it's far more effective and less limiting. But obviously, bold behavior by itself will only go so far. Boldness must be molded by charismatic and efficient communication. Just behaving recklessly and without abandon will attract women to you and will give you sexual opportunities, particularly in club and party environments. But without communicating in a charming and interesting manner, and without being aware of social norms, it's unlikely to get many women to stick around, and your relationships will not be as enjoyable. You can build up an incredibly attractive lifestyle and persona, focus on the proper demographic, act boldly and pursue women shamelessly, but if you can't communicate to them your intentions and your personality well, then it will be hard to maintain their interest for very long. The fifth part of this book will cover how to revamp your communication and how to make good impressions upon everybody that you meet. Part 5, Honest Communication. Chapter 12, Your Intentions. Quote, "The highest forms of human understanding we can achieve are laughter and human compassion." Richard Feynman, physicist. In Chapter 4, we talked about how honest vulnerability only holds weight when it's communicated unconditionally, i.e., when you compliment a girl or express yourself, you're not doing it with an ulterior motive, you're simply expressing yourself. In this chapter, I'd like to take that idea further. You could say men and women almost speak two entirely different languages. Men mostly communicate through facts, stories, and data. We discuss sports statistics, how we fixed our car last weekend, and where we plan on going next month.